welcome to the Growthpoint Properties Australia half-year results announcement 2018. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Mr. Timothy Collier, Managing Director. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I'd like to start today by welcoming everyone to the Growthpoint Properties Australia first half 2018 results presentation. With me today are members of Growthpoint's executive, Michael Green, Aaron Hockley and Dion Andrews. Today I will start with an overview of the results, detailing some highlights of the half year. I'll then introduce Dion Andrews, Growthpoint CFO, who will discuss financial management. Following that, I will close with some comments about Growthpoint's property portfolio, the group's strategy and outlook. The executives will then take your questions. Moving to slide four, highlights for half year 18. To begin with, management and the board are pleased to present these results, which validate the group's recent property portfolio and financing strategies and set Growthpoint on a strong path to deliver the upgraded financial year 18 guidance provided to the market last October. It was another positive half for the group, delivering funds from operation per security of 12.5 cents and a distribution of 11 cents per security, which is 3.8% higher than the prior comparable period. The group completed $260 million worth of transactions over the period, including acquisitions of $114 million and $91 million of divestments, highlighting the continued active management of the group's property portfolio. Gearing has been lowered over the half to 35.8%, whilst the NTA or net tangible assets increased by 6.9% over the half to $3.08 per security. The book value of the property portfolio increased to $124.6 million or 4% on a like-for-like basis over the half year. Regarding Growthpoint's proposed new 20,000 square metre A-grade office building in Richmond, leasing marketing has commenced and construction is currently out to tender. Moving to slide five. In July 2017, the group announced the acquisition of four adjoining modern industrial warehouses at Perth Airport for $46 million, providing an initial passing yield of 8.1% and weighted average lease expiry of 6.4 years. These assets are now fully integrated into Growthpoint's property platform and are performing well. Also in July, Growthpoint acquired an 18.2% interest in the ASX-listed industrial REIT for approximately $68.1 million. The investment has provided an attractive distribution yield, NTA per security and ASX price growth since acquisition. The board and management continue to view Growthpoint's interest in IDR as a quality standalone investment. However, we'll continue to consider strategies that are in the best interests of Growthpoint security holders. In November 2017, Growthpoint sold a Woolworths distribution centre in Mulgrave, Victoria, to a private investor for $90.75 million at a very low yield of 5.2%. And a 38% premium to the assets 30th of June 2017 book value. Significant leasing of 42,000 square metres has been completed since 30th of June 2017, equating to 4.3% of the total lettable area of the portfolio. Completion of these transactions enabled the group to upgrade guidance during the period, with financial year 18 FFO upgraded 3% to at least 24.3 cents per security, and distributions upgraded 1% to 22.2 cents per security. Moving to slide six. Important for Growthpoint in the property sector is the supportive economic conditions present in Australia, particularly those for the office and industrial slash logistics sectors where Growthpoint invests. The unemployment rate is at 5.5%, is at its lowest level in 4 years and trending down after almost 400,000 new jobs were created in the last 12 months. Businesses are positive, with the rise in confidence reflected of an improved global economic backdrop, notwithstanding recent market volatility. Population growth has also been strong along the eastern seaboard. As we know, office vacancy rates have fallen nationally from 10.2% to 9.6% during the last 12 months, with key Sydney and Melbourne markets now having a vacancy rate under 5%. Nationally, industrial leasing for existing stock and new pre-lease facilities has been well above the 10-year average, supported in part by growth in demand for space by online retailers. Tenancy demand for industrial and logistics space continues to be robust. We continue to favour investment in office and industrial property markets over retail. The Australian consumer is experiencing low wages growth. The savings rate is now low. There is high household debt, whilst the structural changes in the retail market are still playing out. I'll now hand over to Dion Andrews to discuss the financial results in more detail.
Thanks, Tim. I'd just like to say up front, from a finance perspective, this is a pleasing result, with the numbers showing that the group's recent strategy of reweighting the portfolio into office, New South Wales and Victoria is delivering positive financial outcomes for security holders. In my presentation today, I'll start by detailing some of the highlights of the result and then review a few specific areas of interest for investors, including movements in NTA per security, gearing and upcoming debt maturities. Starting with the highlights on slide 8, statutory profit for the period was $207.3 million, an 83% increase on the prior corresponding period. This equates to earnings per security of 31.3 cents, which is the highest reported EPS of any half since Growthpoint's inception. NTA per security increased 6.9% to $3.08, and gearing was reduced 270 basis points over the period to 35.8%, which is near the bottom of the group's target gearing range. Funds from operations were 12.5 cents per security, and the group declared a distribution for the half of 11 cents per security, up 3.8% on the prior corresponding period. Both FFO and distributions are well on track to meet full-year guidance, which was upgraded in October following the settlement of the Perth industrial acquisition. Turning now to slide 9, we see gearing at the end of the period was 35.8%, 270 basis points lower than 30 June 2017, and 490 basis points lower than a year ago. The key drivers of the reduction over the period were utilising proceeds from the sale of Nunda and Woolworths Mulgrave to pay down debt, and continued growth in valuations across the portfolio, driven by further cap rate compression, improving market rents, and some favourable leasing completed over the period. All things being equal, management and the board consider this level of gearing as appropriate given the outlook for the domestic economy and property market. On slide 10, we see net tangible assets rose to $3.08 per security at 31 December 2017, a rise of 6.9% on 30 June, and an increase of 13.2% across the calendar year. A key driver of the uplift during the half included property revaluations, with approximately one-third of the increase relating to higher market rents and leasing outcomes. The other main component of the increase in NTA was the sale of Woolworths Mulgrave, which sold at a 38% premium to its book value. Slide 11 shows the debt maturity profile of the group. While still some time out, a focus over the next 6 months will be to address upcoming debt maturities, which amount to $200 million in FY19 and $315 million in FY20. Gracepoint has built a well-diversified debt funding profile, resulting in a range of options being available to either extend the upcoming bank debt or replace some of the maturing bank debt with a further debt capital markets issuance where appetite for Australian paper remains strong. We are currently considering all available debt markets to achieve the best outcome for security holders, understanding it's important to have the right balance between the overall cost of debt, the average tenor, and overall diversification of sources of funding. The group will look to increase the weighted average maturity of the debt book with the goal of aligning it closely with the group's WALE. 79% of all debt is now fixed, and the weighted average fixed debt maturity is 6 years, while the overall cost of debt was kept at an average of 4.4% per annum. Finally, the group maintains strong liquidity with $231 million of undrawn debt facilities available at 31 December. In summary, the group will continue to target growth in distributions to security holders of 3-4% per annum, supported by known income growth within the portfolio, low lease expiries over coming periods, and a high proportion of debt costs being fixed. This provides excellent visibility of growth over the medium term. The balance sheet is well positioned with gearing near the bottom end of the group's target range. The group will consider further debt capital markets issuance to address debt maturities over the next two financial years. The combination of gearing at the low end of the range, a high proportion of fixed debt for the medium term, and highly visible income growth leaves us well placed to support the business and future transactions of the group may undertake should the right opportunities become available. Thank you. I'll now hand back to Tim.
Thank you, Dion. Now to slide 14. This slide details the active management gone into reshaping the property portfolio over the past 2 years and some of the benefits that have flowed to security holders from our strategies. You'll see there Gracepoint has acquired office buildings to a value of $727.3 million with one sale, a Brisbane suburban asset, and under selling for $106.25 million. Importantly, the bulk of the acquisitions in the office sector have been made in New South Wales and Victoria, markets which have experienced significant growth in valuations, increased market rents, and falling incentives. Growth in investment in the office portfolio has partly been funded by the sale of $258.5 million of industrial property. Whilst we remain positive on the outlook for the sector, a number of assets at Gracepoint has sold had medium-term leasing and reversionary income risks. And in respect of the Mulgrave property sold, this had longer-term development potential to a higher and better use, with the price achieved reflecting this value. So the portfolio composition and quality has been improved. Importantly, the financials have followed, with compound annual FFO growth of 5.4% over the last 2 years, distribution per security growth of 4.4% per annum, and NTA growth of 8.9% per annum, whilst at the same time, gearing has been reduced to the bottom of the group's target range. Slide 15. This slide highlights the diversification of the property portfolio by sector, tenant type, and by state. Geographically, 87% of the portfolio is located along the eastern seaboard. The group values security of tenure, which is why so much time internally is spent on reviewing our tenants' industry sector, their business model and financial strength. This applies to new tenants as well as existing tenants. 81% of tenants are either listed or government-owned, with the remaining 19% made up of private companies and other tenants. So so a quality tenancy base. To slide 16. Continuing analysis of the tenants of the portfolio, you can see that Growthpoint's rental income is backed by quality tenants, with the top 10, including Woolworths, the state and Commonwealth governments, Lynn Fox, Country Road, David Jones, Samsung, Lion, and ANZ Bank. Portfolio occupancy continues to remain high at 98%, with low near-term lease expiries. Like-for-like NPI growth on an FFO basis was 0.7%. The measure excludes around 25% of current portfolio income, excluding properties with growth that have been sold and purchased since December 2016. Looking forward, we expect like-for-like NPI growth to be in the range of 1-2% in financial year 19, assuming a consistent portfolio. Rental income received for leased properties grows annually at a weighted average rate of 3.3% per annum, well above inflation, with 92% of leases having fixed annual reviews and 8% of leases being referenced to the Consumer Price Index. Moving to slide 17. Our primary focus is to increase distributions payable to Growthpoint security holders over time. The business model with quality tenants, good WALE, low vacancy rate and upcoming expiries, predictable operating costs and medium-term hedge debt provides a sustainable base for the group to generate future earnings. Growthpoint is currently considering further debt capital market issuances where long-term debt at attractive fixed rates is still on offer. We reiterate our upgraded financial year 18 guidance of FFO of at least 24.3 cents per security and distributions to security holders of 22.2 cents per security. Current pricing, this equates to an attractive financial year 18 DPS yield of 7.1, which further is attractive when is compared to our A-REIT peers. Moving to the slide 18, the summary. Growthpoint believes domestic economic conditions, where the Reserve Bank is forecasting economic growth of around 3% for the next few years, remain favourable for commercial property markets. Growth will translate to higher demand for office and industrial space. In calendar year 2017, $34.1 billion of commercial real estate changed hands in Australia, including $10.7 billion in the last quarter. There is strong demand to invest from a range of buyer groups, including offshore investors, domestic super funds, unlisted and listed funds, private buyers, as well as private equity. Prospective returns remain attractive from a global perspective. We will continue to evaluate opportunities to sell assets where premium values can be realised based on a change of use. Growthpoint will continue to evaluate investment in the listed market when opportunities are present, particularly where we see investment being better value than acquisition of property in the direct market. And this continues the group's strategy over the last 2 years. We have been developing organic growth opportunities, be that via new development or expansion of existing assets, building the portfolio while maximising value of the individual asset. Finally, we move into the remaining half of financial year 18 with the balance sheet in good shape and the group on track to meet financial year 18 guidance. Thank you for your time today. I will now hand over for the Q&A session.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star and then two. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before you ask your question. Your first question comes from Stephen Lamb from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, team. Had a few questions. So what leasing and vacancy assumptions have you adopted to get to the 1%-2% like-for-like NPI guidance? What's dragging it down given the weighted average rent review of 3.3%?
We'd have to go through each individual roll of leases, so it's probably not appropriate. We can do that separately with you, but obviously, you know, there will be some vacancy through the portfolio, so your actual growth is going to be less, slightly less than the average weighted under your leases. So
yeah, typically, Stephen, when we know of a tenant leaving, we'll adopt 100% vacancy, and then we'll have a period of let up between 6 and 12 months. Where it's a bit further out, we typically have a 6 month let off period with 50% retention rate on that tenant, and so that filters through the numbers. So where you've got 2% potential vacancy coming up in FY19, you know, you could, there'll be some that we're pretty confident will retain, some where we know that they're already looking in the market, so it'll be a combination of those two.
Okay, thank you. And in terms of your capital management, do you feel capital management initiatives are done and you're comfortable with where gearing is at now?
Yes, Stephen, it's Dion Andrews here. Look, we're certainly at the bottom of our target range at the moment, so yes, we're very comfortable with that, where that is. We are continuing to look at, you know, asset divestments where they make sense. So as Tim mentioned, you know, if there's a higher and better use and we can get a significant upside on a sale, we'll still continue to divest property where we see it makes sense. And then really what we're looking at is just what we do with our debt maturities and making sure that we have that long-dated fixed debt in place just to guard against any future interest rate rises over the medium term.
So there's no intention to get gearing below the target range in order perhaps to put yourself in a position to be able to take advantage of more opportunities if they arise? And also on that, would you intend to deactivate the DRP given where gearing is at?
Yeah, potentially the DRP. We will always look at that, whether it's required or not. Usually we have property investments to put that into. We left it on, we made the decision to leave it on this December just to ensure that gearing was towards the bottom end of the range where we think it's appropriate to be. But no, we wouldn't take gearing below the bottom of the range deliberately. We have that range for a reason. That is where we feel comfortable and we think the portfolio supports that gearing range. But we are aiming to be towards the bottom end of it at the moment.
And on the office development, can you just remind us again what milestones in terms of level of pre-commitment is needed before you proceed? And if we were to proceed, what's the yield on costs and the timing in terms of construction period and when you're thinking it may commence?
Yeah, sure. So the level of pre-commitment is still up for discussion with the board, so it's been under evaluation. We've got two towers, essentially. One's about 7,500 and the other one's about 11,700 metres. We've tended to think that if we can at least get one, that would support the development going ahead, pre-committed. The time for getting it out of the ground is 18 months post signing an AFL agreement for lease. So you can look, if we were to sign an agreement for lease tomorrow, then it's 18 months. As far as where we're at with other milestones, we've tendered the building contract now. We're working towards we've got a preferred sort of builder in mind at present, and we're talking to them on an exclusive basis right now. And that's really, I think I've answered all your questions. The yield on cost is between 7 and 9%.
Thank you. And on Sydney Olympic Park, is there any updates for Quad 2 and 3 with regard to rezoning to mixed use?
It's currently zoned mixed use, but because it's got a ground lease in place and the ground lease specifies that you can only use it for office, you would need to build residential there, you would need to agree a investment payment with the Sydney and the Parks Authority to convert it from leasehold to freehold. And the process to do that essentially is underway at the moment. So we're going through that process right now. We're also, so the plan is essentially to agree an appropriate amount that both of us see fit for that payment, and then to take it to market so that there's some certainty around what that payment would be. And we've got agents working on marketing collateral at the moment for that, assuming that we can move all those things ahead together this half.
And whilst on Sydney Olympic Park, you've got a first right of refusal over Quad 1 and 4 and 4 Murray Rose Avenue. Do you have any idea what the owner's intentions are for those assets and how you feel about them?
It's Tim here. We talk to GPT from time to time and have a good relationship with them. My view, and they've sort of conveyed that, is that they will probably keep hold of for Murray Rose, the property they're building now, partially leased to the New South Wales Fire Service. Just more broadly, I think GPT have seen that, you know, when you've got good suburban properties, well leased, modern, in good locations, and they've even moved into the Parramatta market now, buying that site, and they've got their development site for pre-lease, so they've moved from CBD, which they're very good at, into the suburban areas. I think their attitude is that well leased, good suburban properties are to be held onto, and really sort of an endorsement of the market in which we invest ourselves. So I would think that they would hold on to that particular property. As far as the quads are concerned, I'm not sure what they'll do with that. There's one particular building that has a longer lease on there, so you would have to get rid of that if you were to redevelop those for apartments, but I'm not sure. They might be a bidder for our quads later in this half. Who knows?
Okay. And so on the leasehold payment the payment to convert from leasehold to freehold, what sort of dollar amount are we talking here? And would it be an upfront payment or is it going to be deferred?
It won't be an upfront payment, and we're not really in a position to talk about it at the moment.
Okay.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Tony Sherlock from Morningstar. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. I'm just a little bit, just want a bit of clarity around the type of incentives that were paid for the half. Is the total, I'm looking at one of the slides here, and I think it's 26. Is the total amount paid 17.2, which is the cash fit-outs of 11.6, the rent abatement of 3.3, and the rent-free incentives is 2.3? Is that the order of magnitude I should be thinking about?
Yes, the incentives borne in the half are 17.2 million. That's actually in the accounts and our reconciliation of investment property. You can see that number clearly, but that is the right number there. So it's a combination of money we've paid out for fit-outs or incentives we've essentially borne via rent freeze or rent away.
Okay. I'm just wondering, you didn't do that much leasing. It looked like 27,000 of a million square metres, which, so I'm just wondering how much under or over renting there is in the portfolio, because I suppose that matters.
Yeah, I think I can explain that. Basically, the majority of that relates to the David Jones lease payment of the incentive as the lease has begun. So they've moved into one of two of their buildings, and basically the 9.7 of that incentive relates to David Jones. So we leased two buildings over 23,000 square metres for 15 years. So We have been hit with a larger incentive for a significant property of the portfolio for a very long lease in the one period. So typically, we would have our average office tenancy area is 2,400. So it's effectively doing 10 deals in one period and paying the incentive. So of course, we won't have any incentives on those two properties for another 15 years. So it's somewhat of an anomaly because we're copying a larger incentive just due to the fact that there's a longer period on the lease and a significant area.
So did that incentive happen? Because when you look at slide 30, that lease was completed after 31st December, but the incentive occurred beforehand. Is that how it worked? Is it?
No, the lease started on in July. It's just that we actually struck the deal. So we announced the deal a year ago, or over a year ago now.
Okay.
So that's why it's not in new leases, because it's already been out.
All right, okay, that's fine. Just on the under and over renting that point, do you have, I'm not sure if you're in a position to actually talk to where you sit.
Yeah, so on the valuation market rents, we're about 7.5% over rented. A lot of that sits with our New South Wales Police building, our Hydro Tasmania building, and our Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade building in Canberra. So all government related tenants and all have long leases in place. So that's a big percentage of that over rent relates to government income, essentially.
All right. Next question, sorry, just on the NTA uplift of 16 cents, are you able to disaggregate that between cap rate contraction and market rent growth?
Yeah, so if you just look at the full, if I just talk to the property valuation growth, perhaps it's just, so we had 4% growth like for like, and of that 4%, about a bit over a quarter of that was in relation to market growth, and the balance predominantly was related to cap rate compression.
Okay, so one quarter rent, and sorry, I just lost you a bit, and three quarters cap rate.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. All right. I know you mentioned this is on slide 28, the weighted average cost of your fixed rate debt is just under 4.396. Are you able to say what your all-in cost of debt is in the fixed variable and line fees?
Yeah, we did provide that during the presentation, Tony, but it's 4.4% per annum. Yes.
4.4, okay. That's where I had the number at. I was just looking at 2.96. I know cap rates have been moving down. I'm wondering if there's an internal view that underpins, I suppose, asset sale and purchase strategies around the future movement in cap rates, or is that something that you don't really lean towards or bet on in that sense?
No, we discuss these issues, and like yourselves analysing the sector, we talk about it on a regular basis. So, I think There's a number of different things going on in the market, and I think what we have seen is obviously the REIT market, prices getting affected by the volatility in the market caused by bond rates moving up in the US and so forth. The direct property market, on the other hand, has almost never been as popular as it has been. So we've had 4 years in a row of over $30 billion of transactions, and 2017, as I said before, $34 billion of transactions. And in the last quarter, particularly in Sydney CBD office, $10.7 billion of sales. And we know from when we've sold properties ourselves, the range of buyers looking to invest into Australian real estate is very diverse, and it's global. And we know that a lot of the global investors are setting up teams here. and they want to invest more. So, you know, with our bond rates moving up a slight bit here in Australia, and they're basically back to December 2016 levels, that's not going to slow down people wanting to invest and the yields that we're experiencing now for a period. There will come a time when that will happen, but I think there's incredible demand. There's billions of dollars being poured in. The market is strong. Our economy is good. Our vacancy rates are coming down. Our industrial market's very solid. And, you know, assets are competitively bid. So we've got that dynamic. Then we have, you know, if discount rates move up a bit. So we have the 10-year government bond, and currently Growthpoint's average weighted 10-year IRR is about 7.3. So at December, the bond rate was 2.8. So we have 4.7 at a risk premium for property investment. That margin and the yields to the bond rate is quite attractive on a world or global scale. So there's probably you know, there's probably even room for that to reduce somewhat. And if you read through the research that we have, Jones Lang LaSalle, for example, predict that cap rates will come down a bit further and then level off. And what I think we're all coming to terms with is the rate of cap rate compression is slowing, and eventually it'll stop. And then what does that look like for values going forward? And we see that rental growth is and will remain for a period of time quite strong, which will support values as well. So we talk about it, we look at it, and what we do is when we make an investment choice, we look at the quality of the asset and look at that, the quality of the income and the cash flow, and determine whether we think, you know, in a harder market, will this property still be a good property? So I think the demand for property, small increases in bond rates domestically here, will not have a huge effect. There's already a decent margin to the risk-free rate here in Australia, and then we'll have additional rental growth coming through to support value. So whilst REIT prices might have retracted 10%, you know, in a couple of days, I don't see that happening in the direct property market.
Okay, so just to wrap that point up, your asset sale and purchase strategies would assume cap rates contract a bit more, and when you said rental growth will remain quite...
No, not necessarily. We're not banking on cap rate compression. No.
So I think when we're looking at asset size, as Tim mentioned, we're tending to look for assets where there's another option for growth that somebody's willing to pay a bit more for than what we think it's worth to us. So if you look at the Mulgrave example, we picked up a large proportion of the upside in converting that site from what is an industrial use to a residential use. So that's why there was such a premium paid on book value. And that's, again, why we're looking at the quads as a potential sale. So where there's property that we think we can maximise value out of, which people are willing to pay more than what it potentially sits in our books at, but for a reason, they're the ones that we're looking to sell. We're not looking at it just on where are cap rates likely to go and what should we trade out of, because cap rates are potentially going down.
Okay.
And also, sorry, just with that, you know, part of our sales strategy, as you say, is to get that upside and to capitalise on asset-specific prices. Then the flip side of that is also to reinvest. So over the half year, we sold Mulgrave for $90.75 million. which on the income we were receiving for $4.7 million was a 5.2% exit yield. So we reinvested $114 million during the period at 7.6%. So we're also targeting assets where the exit yield is low, high V, and we reinvest those proceeds into higher yielding assets, quality assets, which will obviously assist us with our earnings growth.
Okay. Just one final, just when you mentioned the that point about rental growth remaining strong, is that, do you still consider that 1-2% NPI growth, is that strong, or are they really, is that what overseas investors still regard as a strong outlook, or?
As we said before, there's a lot of the portfolio that we currently have that's missing from that NPI number. So getting focused on that NPI number, the like-for-like, gives you one result, that 1-2% we're saying in FY19, because of some of the potential vacancy and how we allow for that, and also incentives to be paid on new leasing. But when we look at the broader portfolio, just the income growth from the assets that we've purchased, it far exceeds that 1-2% on a like-for-like number. So we're talking more like 6-8% on that basis. So we don't see that 1-2% is, I wouldn't describe that as strong growth myself, no. But the whole portfolio is income growth and our ability to grow distributions, and that's what our investors are going to look at, that 3-4%. We do believe that is strong growth.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Darren Leung from Macquarie Group. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Just a quick follow-up in terms of the residential opportunities. You mentioned it a few times in terms of better use across the existing portfolio. Can you give us a feel in terms of, you obviously discussed, sort of quad 3 and 4, but can you give us a feel in terms of how many, is it number of assets? Is it like a portfolio dollar value or percentage of portfolio that you'd be able to look at or potentially realise value here from?
Yeah, I mean, Darren, we're really focusing at the moment on quads 2 and 3 as the next step, I suppose. Mulgrave was the first, quads 2 and 3, the next sort of iteration in that strategy. The majority of the rest of our assets are long-term holds for us. They're, office buildings, which have got, some of them have potential to add extra office levels to them, but they're not residential redevelopment sites. So likewise, the majority of our industrial sites are in distribution locations, which have got strong access to the supply chain arterial network, and that's why they're located there, where we've got infill sites there, in strong demand from last mile occupiers. So, I'd say the quads 2 and 3 are the predominant ones we're looking at.
Okay, thank you. And then just your comment, Tim, in terms of assessing value of, or I suppose comparing value between listed investments and unlisted investments. I mean, what are your sort of key metrics that you look at, and particularly in the context of the equity stake that you have in IDR?
That's an all-encompassing question. So just in respect of IDR, I think, we've purchased the interest that about $68 million back in July. We've been happy with, the distribution yield. We've been happy that the NTA has risen, the price has risen. As a standalone investment, it has been good. The board haven't decided to any particular strategy in regard to IDR, and, there are all different strategies. We could sell the stake. We could, make some sort of proposal or hold the stake. But there's been a lot of speculation in the press today and speculation in some reporting, but the fact is that the board haven't come to a conclusion, and it's a good investment. It's a $68 million investment in a $3.3 billion portfolio. So now just to your other broader question, I think if there's a big disparity between the direct market and the listed market as terms of pricing, over a period of time it will correct. And there'll be times when AREIT prices trade at a premium to NTA, and then there'll be times when AREIT prices trade at a discount to NTA. But, obviously at some stage, if you are looking at a trust and you are reasonably confident about their valuations, and it's trading at a 10 or 15 or 20% discount to NTA, one would think that would be good value as an investment. If you're happy with the valuations and it's trading at 10, 15, 20% discount to NTA, and it's an attractive yield, one would think that would be a good investment. So that's the way, that's what I'm seeing in the market. I think, some of the REIT prices and the discounts, which our peers are trading at, are quite attractive for investors.
Okay.
They're good value.
Yeah, I agree with that logic. And, just thinking through your comment in terms of if you agree with the valuations, I mean, as a major shareholder, can I confirm that, you agree with the valuations that RDR is adopting across its portfolio today?
That's for each investor or analyst to decide whether they like the valuations or don't. I'm not here to commentate on that.
Isn't that one of your investments?
Yeah, I think it's just fair to say that we're happy at the price of $2.30, and that's about as much as we can say about valuation.
Okay, thank you. And then just the final one from me, perhaps for you, Dion. You've talked about sort of increasing the debt duration just to match the leases in the portfolio or the WALE. Obviously, a longer duration facility carries a higher cost of debt. Can you give us a feel for where your cost of debt will increase based on sort of current market conditions? And I know it's obviously volatile in the last few weeks, but where it'll go based on your intentions to increase your debt duration?
Yeah, sure, Darren. The analysis that we've been doing, and as you say, we haven't launched anything, so prices can move in the market. But the analysis we've conducted to date, with a combination of rolling some of the existing bank debt and some of the debt capital issuance that we've been looking at, is the cost of debt would not change materially. It would stay quite stable.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
That concludes our question and answer session and our conference for today. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect.